Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 598. It's the 28th of September, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Fairfax. He covers the highlights of their interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June. I also have Dr. Clifford Gross, Executive Chairman of Tech Capitals, TEK. Talks about company progress. They're a very interesting company. They're an international provider of technology and intellectual property services. And I have Chris Bailey from Financial Orbit, covering Sky, Sports Direct, and Merling Entertainments. Plus, of course, I always have this, the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. It's a measure of money flow, essentially. And all these companies, we do endeavour to get on the podcast because obviously there will be demand for them because they're highly followed. Plus, I also have the top three most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. I've got three because there's a lot of likes this morning, and so I've included three today. Plus, today's suggested one for your watch list is Stratex International, suggested by Cynical Bay. I'm not sure if that's the person suggesting it, but the research seems good. But listen, with all companies you hear in this podcast, please do your own research. And the best way of doing that is add them to your Vox Markets watch list, and then you get RNSs straight to the front screen of your phone whenever that company releases one. Okay, I get to the reasons why Cynical Bay has gone with Stratex in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Strafford-Taylor, CEO of Fairfax. That's FFX ticker. Ian, thank you for coming back on the podcast.
Thank you, Justin, for having me.
Now, yesterday you had some interims out, and I was reading through, and I'm quite impressed. Looking very good. I mean, obviously you're CEO, so you're going to say, yes, they're good. But if you can, you know, put out an unbiased point of view there, I mean, are you impressed by them?
I think impressed is the wrong word. I'm delighted with them, yeah. Obviously. It's a much overused word. But given everything that's gone on in the UK and the world this year, to be putting those numbers together, I think we can be satisfied with what we've done in the first 6 months, and also the way things are looking, you know, up to now in the full year. So I'm cautiously optimistic, shall we say that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll go through the results in a bit more detail, and also post-period end results are quite good, I think. And but before that, before we take too many steps ahead of ourselves there, for people who don't know what you do, could you give us a description as to what the business is all about, please, Ian?
Yeah, Fairfax, the genesis of it is to provide online, be that via desktop or phone, you know, via apps, the ability to do foreign exchange transactions ranging from as mundane as getting euros in your hand, so physical cash, through currency cards, right the way through to wiring money, international payments. And we do all of that on one platform. And that's kind of our unique shtick, is that we have competitors in each little piece of that, but not somebody that can pull the whole thing together like we do.
Yeah, and so the mix of business, how does it break down? So, I mean, and also, where does the business come from? How do you generate customers?
That depends on whether it's retail or corporate. So on the retail side, we're getting an increasing footprint digitally, but we augment that with a certain amount of TV advertising, which we did this year and last, which has a very powerful effect. And on the corporate side, that's slightly different. We get a lot of inbound requests, again, due to web presence, and almost, I wouldn't say it's going virally, but we get a lot of recommendations from corporates that are already on the platform. We tell others, and we acquire customers that way, augmented by, rather than TV, we have a small team of people making outbound phone calls.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Last time we came to the podcast, I had someone get in contact with me saying, oh, I've seen them on the TV. And so what channels do you actually advertise on then?
Well, we're not doing it at the moment. We tend to target it around the peak retail travel season, which, as you might guess, is June, July, August. And we basically, we understand very well what our customer demographic is. So we aim for channels that support that. So we're on a sort of a Sky package, some Channel 4. We do some Sky Sports, but typically not football. You know, maybe some advertising around the Formula One channel, cricket, golf, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And is it a case of now, what are people doing now? Is it the same way I mean, because I essentially I'm rubbish at you know, transferring money and stuff, and I usually leave it to the last moment, get the worst rate. So what is the best way to do it, and how do you, and increasingly people are using the website or your app or what?
All of the above. I mean, it's obviously a very difficult question. The problem with foreign exchange is, you know, if you advise someone to do it 6 months before they go on holiday, the rate might be at 120 to the euro, and when they go on holiday, it might be at 150. You might have advised them to do the wrong thing. The price is always moving, and therein lies, you know, some of the rub. However, all of that said, if you want to get your money at the last minute, you can still get it from us rather than at the airport, where you'll pay 10% for the privilege. Mm. And with us, you'll pay, you know, around 1%. So that's, I think people are becoming more aware that they should get online, have a look around, plan ahead a bit, whether they want to buy the currency now or later is ultimately their decision, and find value for money rather than just, you know, accepting what they get at the post office or the airport bureau de change.
Yeah, I remember last time we chatted, just after, I think, the EU vote, and we were discussing it, it made people a lot more aware, you know, the average guy in the street, the lady in the street, a lot more aware of exchange rates, didn't it? Because there was all this headline news about the pound taking a drubbing, you know? And at the time, it was just a month after, but I mean, what was the overall effect of the EU vote for you?
Well, it's interesting because in the run-up to it, we were exceptionally busy. Then, of course, you know, the result comes through and we're leaving. So the pound took a hammering and still hasn't really recovered much from that at all. Mm. So we had a couple of weeks where it was almost like rabbits in headlights. People did nothing. You know, they waited to see what would happen. So we had a little bit of a lull there, and then very strong the rest of July, August and September. So similar thing to what we saw earlier in the year with certain you know, sort of terrorism events, etc. People leaving it, back to our earlier conversation just then, leaving it later to actually buy their currency, but using more increasingly online tools to do it rather than, you know, literally getting at the airport.
Yeah, okay, so 6 months, ended 30th of June. Take us through some of the highlights, Ian, if you will.
Well, turnover, which is the sort of the big number of the amount of FX that we turn over as total, was up by 10%. More interestingly, gross profit was up like 20+, and 29%, and the revenue was up 26%. So you can see that what we've done there, we've increased those metrics more than we have the overall turnover number, and that's because what grew was the card product and the international payment product, and what didn't really was the cash in the post product. But that is the product that we make the least money of, and maybe indicates that people are moving away from using that mechanism and increasingly using services such as ours.
Yeah, well, I see there, quite important there, that you say your margin there has increased from 26 to 30%. And what are the higher revenue? What is the you know, the best margins for you then? What product?
Typically the card products, be it for retail or corporate.
Yeah,
I mean, it costs quite a lot of money to get the product in someone's hands, but once the card's there, then putting money on it doesn't really cost as much to do at all. So you know, once we've acquired them as a customer and given them a card and incurred that cost up front, and that goes to the whole story of the stock anyway. The reason why, you know, we're spending money on marketing now and you know, showed a loss for last year and you know, a loss in the first half, albeit much smaller, is that we believe strongly that acquiring customers now is the right thing to do. We have a cost up front of acquiring, and thereafter we make revenue. So
Well, I'm just looking at that. They're quite impressive. I mean, total retail customers numbers increased by 40,376 to a total of 548,000 there. But of those cards, there were 34,000 were card customers. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. Wow. And your corporate side, you're saying there growth of 64%. Which is very good. And also, I mean, very important here, obviously, because when results are released, it's then in the past, pretty much. But I mean, your post period end is still looking quite strong there. I mean, and your growth in new card sales accelerated further, 17,000 cards sold in 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that is the busiest time. You would expect it to be higher to some extent, but we're very pleased with the number of cards that we're moving. I think the corporate side is worth making a little mention of as well, because that's growing so fast. And what we do on the corporate side, the corporate platform is not just a product that we can sell to corporates who have people traveling overseas. It's also usable for corporates that are incurring expenses in the UK. We make the card free to use in the UK for corporates. So I think over time what you're going to see is FairFX, maybe we have to change the name, because it won't just be FX products that we're offering. And the corporate side is an example of that. That's a UK domestic product as well as an international one.
Okay. And at what point did you get the partnership with Leicester signed? Because that was a good little capture there.
And yeah, and do you know what? They've done quite a few transfers since we signed that. So we had a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. If you look at the sports industry as a whole, and football in particular, you know, there used to be a queue of people wanting to sponsor teams. And, you know, I think there was a slight feeling amongst quite a lot of Premier League clubs that companies such as ours would just give them some money for the privilege of being their effects provider. That's not the deal we struck with Leicester. It was far more a partnership that, you know, if it goes well, that we both benefit.
Yeah.
That's the type of deal we're trying to move towards. We've got a few others we're working on, but I think the important thing is, A, we wouldn't sign a deal with a corporate that we're not happy to have our name associated with, and B, we won't sign up with a corporate unless it's a deal along those lines. We're not in the sponsorship game.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, it looks like it's going well, and all we need is to tell more people about you, I suppose. So,
Quite right.
Yeah, so, Ian, I mean, for people listening right now, you know, give them three reasons why they should hit the follow button on your page on Vox Markets website, please.
I think the first and most compelling is that it's a product, we offer a product that every single person, you know, whether they're going to be an investor or not, needs and wants. Banks have been overcharging for this type of stuff for a long time. We're a very easy product to onboard, so it's easy to become a customer, it's very easy to use us. So I very much believe we're in the right place at the right time, and people should follow it for that reason. Second of all, you know, our technology is cutting edge. We've got a lot more stuff that we're developing, so there'll constantly be refinements to the product that we're offering. So we're keeping up with what is a very, very rapidly changing technological environment. And last but not least, we are diversifying the corporate product shows that, and as I just alluded to, that's not just an overseas travel-related product, so it's not reliant on whether the pound is strong or weak. So we're doing diversification of our revenue streams, all of which should stand us in good stead for the future.
Marvellous. And if those three reasons convinced you, then hit the follow button there at FairFX, FFX ticker, and you'll get RNSs straight to your smartphone whenever the guys release them. Ian, thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Cliff Gross, Executive Chairman of Tech Capital. That's TEK ticker. Cliff, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Justin. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. And I was, looking back at a folder of you on my computer there. And we last spoke end of last year, I think it was, wasn't it?
That's correct.
And how are things progressing there at Tech Capital?
Oh, actually, quite well. We're moving forward on all fronts. Recently, we had a couple of announcements that we thought were material. We've expanded our tech transfer services with the acquisition of certain assets of the Vortex Group. We've continued to expand our portfolio of intellectual properties that we have available for exclusive license, which now numbers 53. And all in all, we're very excited. We've also established a new company called Belscura, invested in it to roll up a non-core and compelling assets from leading medical device companies and institutions. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a few moments. But net, we think we're on track and we're making very good progress, and we're very excited about the near-term future.
Excellent. Well, I was going to say, let's scroll back a bit, because there are people tuning into the podcast all the time, and there are people who probably haven't heard our interview before. So before we go no further, can you tell us exactly what Tech Capital does, please, Cliff?
Oh, yeah, that'd be a pleasure. Tech Capital helps its clients profit from university intellectual property. We seek to achieve this with the fusion of providing intellectual property services coupled with the out-licensing of what we believe to be potentially disruptive IP to Global 1000 companies. So it's a blend of corporate services and venturing into acquiring intellectual properties for subsequent out-licensing.
Yeah, and you have an amazing sort of, search engine, haven't you, that links, 4,000-odd universities? Can you explain a bit about that, please?
Yeah, sure. We have built a global network of all of the major research institutions in the world that have intellectual property available for sale. We source, screen, and present these technologies to clients that have come to us because they require an exogenous pipeline of new innovations to advance their business. Currently, we have roughly 4,500 institutions that we capture information from in every area of science, medicine, and technology. And these institutions span slightly more than 160 countries. We also provide some other services that create value and help us monetize that sort of unrivaled access. We provide a unique service called Invention Evaluator that assesses the market potential of new technologies. Approximately 250 research institutions worldwide use that service to screen their own properties so that they can better focus their investment capital on those higher potential opportunities. We've done over 5,000 Invention Evaluator assessments, and there's very good demand from the universities that are our current customers, and also new universities and corporations are also starting to use the service. And then, as I mentioned in the introduction, we recently acquired the Vortex Group, one of the leading executive placement firms, exquisitely focused on providing tech transfer professionals to research institutions. So this expands the number of services that we provide to our technology suppliers, namely universities and research centers.
Okay, Invention Evaluator. Now, so how does that work? I mean, do you charge for that, or how does that work?
Yeah, let's say you're in the tech transfer office, either at a university or a company, and you have a lot of invention disclosures that are presented to you for bringing to market. You have to choose wisely. And to sagaciously do that, you need to become informed about the market potential of those technologies. So you could purchase an Invention Evaluator report by going online to inventionevaluator.com, uploading the technology information, and swiping a credit card. And then 10 days later, an email link is delivered to your inbox of that report. So we're able to very rapidly deliver what we consider good, comprehensive reports in 10 business days. Further, we do it at a price that we don't think anyone else in the world has been able to provide. And so that's a very unique service that we offer to our university and corporate clients.
Yeah. So let's say I'm at a university, I have an invention, I go through the Invention Evaluator, and it comes up that my invention has commercial viability. Would I then go on to approach you with it, or Tech Capital itself, or would I take it somewhere else? What would happen there?
Normally, if you're in a tech transfer office and you've done a report and it shows that the technology has good promise in being able to be commercialized, you then begin your out-licensing program. And part of the Invention Evaluator reports provide candidates, or high potential candidates, for out-licensing. So we identify the prospects for our clients, as well as analyzing the IP and the marketplace potential. So it's quite comprehensive and very helpful to people managing portfolios of technologies for commercialization.
Yeah, so you have, like you said there, 53 patents.
Yes.
Now on inventions and proprietary there. So of these, how many are close to commercialization? I mean, are there some that typically have super blue sky potential? And can you give us examples of what stage in development they are, or the closest ones to commerciality?
Sure. I'd like to just give you sort of the overarching perspective first, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Since January of 2015, we've acquired 53 properties from a wide variety of leading research institutions. All of these properties we believe to be compelling and ready for market, ready for licensing. The technologies further are acquired at low cost with an innovative forward revenue sharing model which mitigates the investment risk while still creating, in our opinion, significant upside potential. We view this as a low-cost alternative to the traditional university IP incubation model. And so some of the examples are, we have themes against which we acquire technologies. One of our themes is making food more nutritious. And in that space, we've acquired two technologies that we believe are very compelling. One allows you to produce food. It's a coating for food that makes food taste and look fried, but it's actually baked. It's called Crackle Bake. And another is Microsalt, which is a nanoparticle-sized production process for producing sodium chloride that allows you to use roughly half of the amount of salt you would normally use on a surface application, say in a snack food. And so we're in the process of out-licensing all of our technologies, but those two technologies are quite far along, and we have a number of Global 1000 companies that we're currently negotiating with on those two technologies.
Wow. And you know what? It's almost, for a man, I think, well, probably women as well, but they love the type of things, you know, inventions that have the potential to change the way people, you know, work or run their lives or change their lifestyle. They love that kind of idea that there is that you know, mind-bending sort of thought process that people go through to come up with a genius idea. And and I was just reading about the acquisition there of medical device license there, and the Wirecaddy, which is, seems, you know, amazing, really. Can you explain the Wirecaddy, please, Cliff?
Sure. I just need to go up a level so that you can understand the context. Recently, we developed a new tech transfer model to create marketplace value from previously developed technologies. And to achieve this, we launched and invested in Bellascura, a medical device company that rolls up undervalued and non-core IP assets from both first-tier medical device companies and research institutions. We have recently announced that Bellascura has acquired four medical devices from a leading medical device company. All of these devices have been fully developed, have regulatory clearance or approval where necessary in at least one major market, and a history of sales. And we've invested in Bellascura, and so have others, and our goal is to float Bellascura in the first half of 2017. Now, the Wirecaddy was the most recent of those four medical device acquisitions. And the Wirecaddy basically is a device that provides organization during multi-wire, multi-exchange operating room cases, you know, such as cardiology interventions. So it's a way for organizing the wires that surgeons use during a number of different procedures.
Yeah, and I said the device is now cleared for sale in the US and previously achieved commercial sales in over 100 hospitals. So obviously it's a proven model ready to go, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And so that really speaks to the Bellascura model. It's a way of creating market value from either undervalued or non-core assets that have already had substantial development, that have tooling, that have regulatory clearances or approvals, and have a history of sales in most cases. So it's a tech transfer strategy for the medical device space. And it's something that we have innovated at Tech Capital. I'm very proud of it. And we're very excited about both the near and long-term potential of Bellascura. We've established the company and have hired a first-tier, experienced medical device team head up by Bob Rocker. And we have a terrific chairman of that company, Robert Miller, who's vice chairman of the Mayo Clinic, which is a very well-regarded medical research and teaching hospital in the United States. So we've done a lot at very low cost in the last year, or at least since we've spoken last.
Well, no, I've been looking at you know, half your report, and I expected you to have a massive cash burn, but you don't, and you have cash there. And
yes.
So it's amazing how lean the operation is, considering the logistics of screening all these, you know, inventions. And you know, how do you deal with that? How do you? I mean, like I said, I don't know how many you get on a daily basis, ideas and inventions. But how do you screen, you know, in an efficient way, not to tie you up completely?
Yes, a part of building this business has been building it for efficiency, and being able to allocate capital wisely on the highest potential opportunities, either for our clients or for our own portfolio. We've reduced our cost of screening by building a proprietary global discovery search engine, and that has helped us acquire at very low cost the information that we need. And then to filter that information, we've established a scientific advisory board of very knowledgeable individuals in a wide variety of disciplines. Currently, we have 47 scientists across these verticals, but they're only paid when they evaluate specific technologies. So it's an incremental cost as opposed to a large overhead cost. So by those two strategies, we've been able to create a pipeline from the entire world's major research institution of compelling intellectual properties available for acquisition, both for our clients and for our own portfolio.
Marvellous. All right, Cliff. Well, listen, if anyone needs any more convincing there as to why they should follow you and put you on their watch list, could you give us three reasons as to why someone should hit that follow button on the Tech Capital page of Vox Markets, please?
Sure, I'll even make it four if that's allowed.
Yeah, that's allowed. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, as we discussed, we have built what we believe to be the world's largest network of university research centers, which includes more than 4,500 institutions around the world, and we capture all of their IP that's available for sale or license. We also have a very capable management team that's experienced in effectuating transactions and doing analysis of technologies, and a 47-member science advisory board. We've acquired a strong portfolio of compelling intellectual properties available for our exclusive out-license. We believe that the out-license of any one of these properties would add significant shareholder value, perhaps even exceeding our current market cap. Currently, we're in negotiations with a number of major organizations that have expressed strong interest in acquiring an exclusive license to select properties. Our goal, overarching goal, is to grow our IP services business, to expand our footprint and cover all of our operating costs, and ultimately, obviously, produce a profit. And on top of this, the out-licensing of select technologies to global 1,000 companies should, we reckon, over time, create significant returns on invested capital.
Marvellous, Cliff. I look forward to speaking to you again in the not-too-distant future. You know, with 53 patents there, you've always got news, exciting news happening. So I look forward to chatting to you again very soon.
And thanks so much, Justin. Have a lovely afternoon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey of FinancialOrbit.com. Good morning, Chris.
Hi there, Justin. Good morning to you.
Yeah, listen, I want to ask your opinion on something, right? I bought Sky because I just thought it's part of this experiment I'm doing, about doing 50 trades, getting 10% off each and, you know, adding all the money accrued onto the next trade. And EasyJet was the first, got 11% off that. Sky is my second trade, bought at 865 originally. I also bought some more, a bit lower, at 821. And I read through the fundamental reports there, all looking quite good. Increased customers in this country and in Ireland, and they're expanding and they're quite cutting edge. They're going into VR now and drone racing. And I think, you know, it's a premier sort of business, is this Sky. I mean, as a user, I've gone from Virgin Media back to Sky because I quite like it. And yet I saw broker ratings, all very positive, all about sort of 10 quid. I think one at 13 quid and the minimum of 10 quid. And I saw one, an outlier, saying £6.30. And I thought, £6.30? What are you talking? I mean, even if you look at the technical chart, you know, on a fundamental level, on a long term of daily chart and weekly chart, it looks like it's converged here and we've seen a bottom, you know? And I'm thinking, Where do they get this from? How can this one guy out of all these brokers come up with £6.30? And he's from a big broker house. I think it was Liberum or something.
Absolutely.
So where does that, how does that happen?
Well, it happens because brokers have to do one thing, and that is they have to try and induce fund managers and other clients to buy and sell, to trade. And obviously that's not easy. And the trouble is, if you're saying the same thing as everyone else, then either you've got to be really good pals with them or give some kind of fantastic client service or something. Otherwise, it's very hard to differentiate. So by saying something bonkers, and now normally in the city, it's saying something ultra optimistic, you know, Sky shares are worth £15, something eye-catching and headline-grabbing. But occasionally, you go for the negative. I'll give you an example from a year or two ago, and that's, of course, Glencore. Mm-hmm. And we won't name the institution, but somebody said, we think Glencore could go to zero. And of course, that's proved to be wholly pessimistic, completely wrong. But think of that publicity. Think of all the attention they got. Think of the potential spin-off benefits they may have got in terms of trades, etc., in the short term. And that's the critical point. The trouble is, if you're wrong in such a high and explicit fashion, it's a high-risk strategy, you get it wrong, and guess what? You may blot your copybook for future things. But no, this is a headline grabbing. We think this in order to try to rise above the fray, get a bit of flow, maybe get a bit of a reputation and everything else. It's a bit of personal self-promotion. It's a bit of corporate self-promotion. It may or may not have anything to do with fundamentals. As we all know, that the market has a random walk element in any case. You know, we could get an exogenous shock, and maybe Sky shares are at £6.30 just because everything else has, for this extraordinary exogenous shock reason, fallen to that degree. I don't think it's likely, but you know, there you go. That's what brokers do. But I'm afraid...
Well, do you know what? You're right about headline grabbing, because the fact is we are talking about that one person who's not with the pack, you know? And I said a while back, I mean, on the weekend podcast with two friends I do, I said, essentially, you get people making... If you're going to make a claim, make it bold, and it will stand out. And if you are proved right, you know, people will forget your past mistakes or bold claims. It's like you'll always see, headlines from the guy who predicted the 2009 financial crash. And the thing is, they don't look at his previous predictions. He's been predicting that for the last 10 years, every year for the last 10 years. And it's, you know, it's going to happen sooner or later. And when it does, he's the guy they call. He's the guy they get in the TV studio to talk about it, isn't he? You know?
Precisely. And that's it. And the thing is, you know, a broken clock's always correct two times a day. You know, that's the old observation. And it's the same with ludicrous claims as well. So I would agree. You know, the reality is what you're trying to do, trying to make, you know, 10, 12% on a trade and move on for your little project is absolutely right. And that's a much better wealth accumulation strategy than swinging for those big pitches, which, you know, might triple or quadruple your money and probably have exactly the same probability of losing 50 or 100% of your money as well. The reality is Sky shares, I reckon, they could quite happily trade back up to 10 quid. That would give you a double-digit gain. And then you probably move on. It's a solid content business. They've got a few challenges, but they've got a good market position and a sticky product. So my feeling is it's a little bit undervalued. I think you did well buying it in the mid-800s. I think that was a sensible thing to do.
Yeah, okay. And what else are we looking at? You mentioned beforehand Sports Direct, who also have a love-hate relationship. Yeah.
Precisely. I mean, that if you want to look at a share which does not engage with the market or has not engaged with the market in any right and proper fashion, Sports Direct is undoubtedly right up there. You know, corporate governance has been terrible. Most of the brokers just don't know what to do with it. And you look at the share price and it obviously looks apocalyptic. But my view would be, and I guess this is the equivalent of my headline grabbing observation, I actually don't think Sports Direct is going to be a private company listed on the stock market over the next couple of years. I think Mike Ashley actually will take it private. I just don't think he feels comfortable in the market environment. I think he needs to take it private. And ultimately, if he does that, my guess is he does that not with a two in front of the share, but probably a three. I think that's the reality. So, you know, my feeling would be Sports Direct, it feels an impossible investment, but actually I would say speculatively, it is quite interesting. It's one I'm looking at the moment. I would suggest people follow it. And ultimately, you know, many people go to their stores. It is a bit pilot high, sell it cheap, but ultimately people go there and actually have a consumer experience which maybe ticks a few boxes. You know, it's products which they want at pretty competitive prices. Sure, the service is variable and it's all a bit manic inside there, but ultimately I would say the share is a little bit too cheap at the moment, and that's because they haven't engaged with the city and haven't engaged with people, and obviously have had some very high publicity, corporate governance and related problems. But I think actually it is turning around. My feeling is it will move back into the 300s and ultimately actually will disappear from the stock market. Mike Ashley will take it private in conjunction with a few well-heeled financial investors.
Yeah, okay, let's cover one more in the news. I mean, I think 2 days ago, it was announced that Alton Towers owner Merlin Entertainments would be fined $5 million. And as soon as that was announced, I checked the share price to see what was happening. But it didn't seem like they were at the bottom recovering. It seemed like they were already sort of recovering, you know? What do you think on Merlin at the moment?
Yeah, again, a bit like Sky, a great content business. You know, many people would have gone to Legoland or Alton Towers or Magic Swords, fortunately, mostly in a very safe environment. Obviously, they've at least a bit differently to Sports Direct. They've actually come up and said, look, mea culpa, you know, ultimately it was our fault, and we accept the fine and everything else associated with it. So, you know, from a terrible event, they've at least got a couple of brownie points from that. Ultimately, they've got good products here. They've got sticky products. And as anyone who's been to Legoland or related will know, it's not exactly cheap to go there. But people like it and people do go back there. So ultimately, yeah. Content business, hard to replicate. My feeling is if you're not investing in it because of you're worried about where Alton Towers and everything is going, that's the wrong view. And as it gets, you can see the big support at 400 pence. There's big support, 400, 420 pence. It's currently in the mid 440s. I have to say, it is getting close to interesting territory. You see it back in the 420s, I'm buying it because I just think what they have there in terms of sort of, if you like, a content leisure business, I think is attractive to people. And they've had their very unfortunate event, but they've responded in the right and proper fashion, I think.
Yeah, and yesterday, I think it was too late for the market the day before, but yesterday it dropped off a little bit, a bit like a roller coaster ride there, the share price, and hopefully...
Actually, you're right. I mean, I hadn't noticed the roller coaster formation, so I guess we're going into the dip at the moment. Yeah. You bottom out just, and you think it's over, but there's one last ascent to go for. But yeah, I'm waiting for the 420s, that's my level, and I won't be shy at that point.
Marvellous. Chris, thanks very much. Speak next week.
Absolutely. See you soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. It's a measure of money flow. Essentially, people follow these companies, do research, and I'd say invariably invest if they've done a lot of research in these companies. At five, I did a blog on the weekend, chatted about them with Doc yesterday on the podcast, Upland Resources, UPL. At four, Sarium Holdings. Again, Doc covered these in the podcast yesterday, SAR. At three, new entry, Ferrum Crescent, FCR. At two, also covered them on the podcast yesterday with Doc, Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG. And at number one, for the second day in a row, it's ESERV Global, ESG. And like I said, we'll get the guys at Vox chasing these guys up to get them on the podcast. And you can also see, by the way, the top five most followed companies over the last 7 days at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Okay. Here are the top three most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. And this is in order, by the way. At three, Proxarma, half-year report. At two, Ferrum Crescent, issue of consideration of shares. And the number one most liked RNS this morning, by quite a way, actually, was Tellow Energy, TLOU, Environmental Impact Statement approved by the Botswana government. And worth reading about that company. I had them on the podcast, Tony Gilby and Colm, the finance director. And if they do what they've done in the past, with these last two companies, Tony Gilby, it's a lot of potential there, you know? All right, today's suggested one for your watch list is Stratex International, STI, suggested by Cynical Bay. I'm quite cynical about that name, but there we are, the research is here. What does the company do? Exploration and development company focused on gold and base metals in West Africa and Turkey with a 40% stake in a low-cost producing gold mine in Turkey. How many shares does the company have in issue? 467 million. A major shareholder include AngloGold, Teck and BlackRock. Only 56% in free float, therefore. What's the current price of market cap? It's 1.875 pence, a market cap of 8.76 million. What revenue profit loss did the company generate? No revenue in H1 2016 loss. The group's operating loss for 6 months is 1.18 million. How much cash or debt does the company have? Cash balance for the group as of the 30th of June was £2.72 million. List three reasons why people should put this company on the Vox Markets watch list. Number one, recent new CEO appointment of Marcus Engelbrecht has been responsible for turning both Oceana Gold and Archipelago Resources from market caps of under 5 million to over 100 million and 300 million respectively. Number two, first revenues from 40% old Altın Tepe gold mine are imminent. Production in excess of 30,000 ounces of gold at a cash cost of only $560 per ounce. Number three, the company is under radar, has not placed stock for 5 years. I thought, really? So I did look into this. I think it's correct. But I mean, they haven't. But although on April the 19th this year, Thani Stratex Resources Limited, in which the company has a significant interest, raised $2 million with Resource Capital Fund, giving the Resource Capital 15.2%. As a result, Stratex holding in Thani been diluted from 38.4 to 32.4. But they haven't themselves, by the looks of it. Brokers Northland and SP Angel have a target price in excess of 6 pence per share. And of course, they're at 1.8475 right now. So that's Stratex International. STI is ticker. By all means, do your own research on the company. One of the best ways to do that, like I said, is to hit the follow button on their page, and they will be sending you RNSs whenever they release them. Thank you very much for getting involved there and submitting that. By all means, if you know of a company that should be on other people's watch lists, submit it here, and lots of people will hear it. That's voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the link there on one of my blog entries. You can see this at Vox Podcast entry there, and it's a form there. It'll take about 5-10 minutes to fill in, and I'll be featuring it on a future podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.